south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's jump right in. A couple of shows ago, we're talking about guns in Latin America, how gringos and expats can own guns. And, of course, the countries that allow it. The countries that don't allow gringos and expats or anyone to own guns, well, they would never be a choice for my plan. Like, for example, Cuba, Mexico, Brazil, Venezuela. You've heard me roll out the list. Anyway, after talking about owning guns a bit and some of the rules and regs on a previous show, Mr. K, an expat living in Guatemala and a gun owner, he sent me a copy of the actual test you have to take to apply for your gun license and the right answers. He basically sent me a cheat sheet. It's in Spanish, of course. Turns out there's 20 multiple choice questions and 12 fill in the blanks. Plus, there's an addendum to the test showing parts of a gun and all the rules and regs for owning guns in Guatemala. So, Mr. K, thanks for that. Much appreciated. You know, lots of people I think out there are going to want to have a copy of this. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll shoot you off a copy. And though I have the official gun license exam for Guatemala, I've been told that pretty much all 15 Latin American countries that allow gringos and expats and, well, anyone who qualifies to own a gun, they all pretty much use the same format. It's a nice document to have. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you a copy. Anyway, along with giving me a copy of the test, Mr. K writes the following. He says, Johnny, as you mentioned, I thought your listeners might want this material. Currently, we're trying to find out if you can bring a translator with you if you don't know Spanish when you take the test. As the law does not stipulate you can or you can't, it also does not require that you can read or write Spanish. I suppose it's meant for the illiterates, of course. He finishes by saying, Johnny, P.S., as to your question about the quality of your podcast, yes, you do repeat yourself, but not that frequently. And some repetition is required and helpful, I think. As for me, I still enjoy your podcast and keep listening, even though I'm down here now living in Guatemala myself. Still, your show is always interesting. Signed, Mr. K. Oh, and just one more thing I forgot to mention in one of Mr. K's earlier emails. He said, Johnny, I'm into natural and homeopathic medicines as much as I can be. And through a recommendation from your favorite Guatemalan dentist, Dr. Alex, my girlfriend and I found a real MD who's part-time heart specialist and the other time naturopathic practitioner. He mainly works with homeopathic compound medicines, a lot of them made by a company called Heal in Germany, I'm familiar with. And he also uses electroacupuncture. No, this is no torturing device either. And he uses neural therapy as well. As far as naturopathic medicine, he's really on top of it. Anyone interested in his contacts, just let me know. All right, now an email from Mel, a former Expat Insider seminar attendee. She's in Panama right now, and she wrote this about gringos and expats trying to do business in Panama. She says, hey, Johnny, I just heard about a new requirement for doing business here in Panama. Seems they are cracking down on paying folks under the table. It's a no-no. You mustn't do that anymore. Turns out there's a new requirement that requires your accountant to register all your employees monthly in a new online system, and retroactively too, back to the beginning of the year. The intent is for employers to prove they are paying their part of the Social Security into the system. All right, thanks for that info, Mel. Me, Johnny here. I'd say retroactively does kind of sum it up. The fact is, if you end up having your plan B in Panama, you have to realize the government there is on a fast track to doing everything possible to be first world, especially in the area of fees, taxes, and other government gouges. After all, there's a lot of money slashing around in Panama, mostly foreign money from Europeans, gringos, and the Chinese, of course, who are bringing in tons of money. In fact, the Chinese now own the land at both ends of the Panama Canal. That sound okay to you? Well, I know quite a few gringos and expats doing business in Panama, and they're not okay with it. They're saying things like, as long as tensions with China are low and everything's okay business-wise, no problem. But they're worried about the future, and worldwide tensions are only going to get worse. Think about it. If you're living in Panama and the shit hits the fan worldwide, and it looks like the fuse has already been lit, and you happen to be a Canadian or a U.S. citizen living in Panama, you're a Westerner. and the Chinese basically own your country. Is that a Plan B destination you want to be in? Personally, I don't get it. There's so many intelligent, smart, even brilliant expats and gringos. Most of them completely aware about what's happening around the world, how it's rapidly unwinding and deteriorating. We're talking about smart people who are not, in any manner, woke. They get that Plan B going. They get the hell out of Dodge. They move to a place like Mexico or Panama. They find a nice area, a nice niche. They're in their own little paradise. Yep, they're smart for getting the hell out of Dodge, all right, but they never seem to give any thought as to what it's going to be like 2, 3, 5, even 10 years from now. They make that Plan B decision based on what it's like living there right now, as if it's going to continue to remain that way. And remember, speaking of Panama, and the fact that Panama is Latin America's banking hub, and people that do business there will tell you that the banking rules and regs have become extremely excessive. In fact, at last count, Panama City alone has 67 banks. And the rules and regs for gringos and expats and any foreigner to open bank accounts are out of this world. And look out if you want to open a legit business. The labor laws are extreme too, and they do enforce them. I've got gringo friends in Panama City who have businesses who say they'd never do it again. 5 or 10 years ago, it was a piece of cake. It used to be easy, but now it's a red tape nightmare. And if you have any employees at all, you have to keep filing monthly and quarterly reports. So with all the first world people piling in and all the bank and banking regulations, I wouldn't want to be doing business in Panama. Nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. I know. Every gray-haired gringo with a Plan B wants to move to Boquete. They hear it's so nice. It's slightly up a mountain, so it's a little bit cooler than the coast. Loaded with retired gringos and expats, too. To me, it's just another version of a Miami old folks village. I've been there. The weather's nice. It's not exactly the Altiplano, but I was bored out of my gourd within a week. Hell, it's like a gringo retirement village, if you like that kind of thing. Old gray-haired gringo retirement folks are predictable. They have their habits. Coffee clutching, playing checkers with other gringos, and watching sunsets. And actually fading into the sunset is not my idea of living the expat dream. To me, there is no real vibrant energy there. They roll up the sidewalks at 9. But hey, for some expats and gringos, it is. I know some gringos up in the States, they're close to retirement, and all they talk about is being able to play golf every day. I say, hey, go for it. But it's not my idea of the way I want to fade into the sunset. That may be fine for you. I don't know. As for me, I'm kind of restless. I need a wide variety of things to do that don't involve sitting in a rocking chair on the porch, no matter how beautiful the sunset is. Is my idea of retirement doing laps with the geezers in the mall, hitting Starbucks twice a day, and staring at a screen? Nope, not in your life. I mean, not in my life. Hey, I'm not knocking it if that's what you like, but it's not for me. All right, speaking of Panama, you know, a couple of shows ago, I was talking about those huge protests in Ecuador. They're over now for the time being, but the natives are restless, and there are lots of supply chain problems now. They're threatening to do it again if the government doesn't comply with those gas subsidies. They say if the government doesn't hold gas prices to $3 or less, they'll go on strike again. Meanwhile, the protest contagion due to inflation and high prices has hit Panama in a big way, more than it ever has in recent history. Again, it's all about the hoi polloi wanting something for nothing, which basically means price controls and subsidies. And subsidies, you know, are always coming from government coffers that are already empty. So they raise taxes and take out more loans from the IMF, the World Bank, and the Chinese, of course. Governments never learn. They're retarded. Every experiment with price controls and subsidies end with disaster, with shortages, supply chain problems, and black and gray markets. There are hundreds of examples of how that plays out, and it's never good. But it stops the protesters from picketing and taking to the streets, at least for a while. Hey, we all want something for nothing. I want something for nothing, too. You got something to give me? I'll take it. And now with super high food and gas prices, there are protests going on all over the world, and there are big ones going on in Panama right now. Protesters from many different groups, too. Though it's most exclusively the middle and lower middle classes that are taken to the streets. People living on the edge, living from day to day. But anyway, in Panama, protesters are from all different groups now. They're all demanding lower prices for gas, food, medicine. And get this, they're demanding less corrupt government and the cut in government wages, too. Yeah, right, like that's ever going to happen. Isn't it funny, though? Of all the protests going on in all the world, there are hundreds of them a day in different places, right? The only group that never seems to protest at all are government workers. Isn't that funny? However, public school, that is, government teachers, go on strike all the time because they really do get the shit end of the stick. You may have heard me say this before. It's a fact. Seems like in Latin America, every middle and lower middle class person wants to work for the government, with the exception of primary and grade school teachers. They do get the shit end of the stick. But the rest of the government jobs, including university professors, for some odd reason. Actually, I do know the reason. Teaching at a public university in Latin America is a revolving door for politicians. Turns out getting a teaching or professor job at a public university in Latin America, it's all about what political party you're connected with. That's why public universities here are, just like in the States, socialist indoctrination mills. Anyway, it's true. Almost every middle and lower middle class Latino that doesn't own his own business would prefer to work for government instead of a private employer. Because they pay twice what the private sector pays for doing half the work and you can't get fired. Not even if you screw the boss's wife. It's the same in the US, right? Then again, if you kill her, they'll probably fire you, but you'll get back pay and lifetime health insurance. A little hyperbole there, but it's not such a stretch. That's what it's like up in the States. I heard it from the horse's mouth, a union steward from the Chicago Street Department. He was half joking when he said it, but he was half bragging too. Anyway, gringos and expats who've been living in Panama for a long, long time say there haven't been protests like this in over 30 years. For one thing, the main road that goes through the country, the Pan-American Highway, is blocked in many locations. Makes it impossible for gas, food, propane, etc. to get delivered. Supply chains have been cut, so many gas stations are out of gas and grocery stores have bare shelves. Farmers aren't delivering their crops. That means they're eating well, but people in the bigger cities have more limited choices at the markets. Now, the government has caved a bit. At the start of the protest, gas was $5 a gallon, and now they've lowered it to $3.95, and now it's $3.40. The protesters, however, are demanding $3 or less a gallon. And of course, nothing's for nothing, so where do you think the subsidy money's coming from? On top of that, the government has put price controls on basic food items, which even feeble-minded economists like the ones working at the Fed will tell you is a recipe for shortages. Meanwhile, Vicky from Montreal writes, she says, "Johnny, can't wait for your next seminar. Almost made the last one, but we were locked down so hard and heavy, it was a no-go from the start. Besides that, if I could have made it there, on my way back to Canada, I would have had to spend 12 days in quarantine, automatically. Johnny, what kind of world are we living in? That should have been the last straw for me, and I thought it was. But then again, things loosened up a bit, everyone went back to work, and you kind of forget how bad it really was. Then came a new last straw. The last straw for me was that new federal carbon tax that we have here in Trudeau's Canada. It's causing the price of food and other goods to soar. Trudeau has implemented it here, and it's coming to the States. They've found another way to pick our pockets. It's coming to the States real soon, don't you worry. A carbon tax on everything you buy. And now, our mental midget cabinet ministers are proposing a tripling of the carbon tax by 2030. I can't get out of here fast enough. I heard you say your next seminar will probably be in Dominican Republic. Sign me up. Because before I leave the communist state of Canada, I want to get that fire hose treatment you're talking about. All right, thanks for that, Vicky. Hope to see you at the seminar. I think it's going to be in October, late October, in the Dominican Republic, the DR. As we normally do, it'll be a week-long event, everyone drinking from the fire hose. We won't let you drown, but I hope you can swim. Morning classroom, afternoon, boots on the ground. We're putting the plan together right now. And to get on the early bird discount waiting list, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. All right, switching gears a little bit. You know, I don't like to turn this show into a Lonely Hearts Club mating and dating forum. But believe me, I get enough emails and questions about mating, dating, love and romance, Latin style. I could have two shows completely, one just for expat living in Latin America and the other exclusively for love and romance. After all, I'd say a good 50% of everyone who comes to my seminar is either single or divorced and looking for or open to love and romance. Hopefully not in all the wrong places. So the mating, dating, love and romance theme is always lurking somewhere in the background. And so often, months, sometimes years later, when I run into expat insider seminar alumni who were unattached when they first came down, most all of them have told me it doesn't take long at all for a relationship to develop, even when the gringo's Spanish really sucks and there's a huge language barrier. And some people who've been down a long time have been through a slew of them. But sometimes, especially on the gringo tourist trail, gringas and gringos will pair up. Whatever, that's life. It also happens once in a while when a married couple or couple comes down, they become casualties of divorce or separation too. I've seen that happen any number of times. As one gringo expat friend of mine said, a guy in that very same situation. He said the mistake me and my ex had, before we were exes, is that we thought moving to Latin America was going to fix some of our marital problems. He or they figured getting completely away from the environment they were in, a fresh start with all new scenery and faces, would save the marriage. Well, he said they made the right move all right, but it didn't fix the underlying problems that were already there. And now, in their case, both of them are living happily ever after in Latin America with different people. Hey, that happens more often than you think. All right, since I teased you a bit with the mating and dating thing, let me pull an email out of the Expat Lonely Hearts Club file. This one comes from Mr. James. He says, Johnny, the dating and mating scene in Latin America for gringos can be summed up as follows. Be careful what you wish for. I know it's a cliche, but it sure sums up what's happened to me. I'm 54 years old and in decent shape. I've been living in Guatemala for 3 years now, and my Spanish is just now kicking in. I came down with no Spanish whatsoever. I've been living in the Lake Atitlan region of Guatemala, what's called the most beautiful lake in the world. I'm just starting to understand the lingo of the local people on the street. My Spanish is starting to work, but still people give me a funny look, and I often have to repeat myself when I see that quizzical look on their face, like they just didn't get what I was saying, and vice versa too. I find myself saying, otra vez, por favor, or repetirla, por favor, or my default, no entiendo, meaning repeat that, please, or give it to me once again, or I just don't understand, no entiendo. And then most often they'll rephrase it in a simpler way. Anyway, Johnny, I came down here as a single guy who oftentimes struck out in the mating and dating game in the States. Johnny, I struck out a lot. In my hometown of Denver, I was always a five going after eights. It's always been my MO since high school. That means my ego was bashed and bruised relentlessly. Think about it. A guy who always sets his mating and dating bar too high is going to get slapped down a lot. Bad for your ego and self-esteem, but you get calloused to it. Some of us are just masochists with unrealistic expectations. Yet we keep playing the lottery hoping we'll win. After all, there are all kinds of male dating self-help gurus out there building our hopes and egging us on. Those dating gurus tell us average guys we can punch above our weight. After not having a single date for over a year and a half, I bought all the books and courses I thought I'd learned the art of seduction. With a newfound confidence, I jumped back into the game again, and when I did manage to date a few women who were eights. It didn't take long, though, to find out the girl was either a psycho, she was broke, or had extreme kid and family baggage. I even got engaged to one. She turned out to be a closet drinker with a mean streak. I found out the hard way there are many hidden, tragic reasons why 8s, 9s, and 10s will lower their bar to go out with guys like me. I'm just an average guy, not a doctor, a lawyer, or a guy with a beamer. With me, you get what you get. I'm just a nice, stable, peaceful guy with a paid-for middle-class house and a humble bank account. But it seems I'm not good enough for a girl who's an 8 or above, unless she's desperate or has some kind of fatal flaw. The sad thing is, and maybe it's true of a lot of people, it seems the more relationships you have, the more guilt you have about those former relationships that didn't work out. For me, there's a general place in my brain I think that's reserved for pain and guilt of broken past relationships. I sometimes remember those things at inopportune moments, even happy moments. Things will pop into my brain to remind me of past failed relationships that could have worked out, if maybe I'd have been more flexible or tolerant. Yes, I feel a certain shame and regret, especially when I'm listening to country music. So after being out of the game for a while, I dipped my toe back in. About a year ago now, I started hitting the American mating and dating sites. Man, do people lie. Maybe I'm just too old-fashioned or have been out of the game for so long. It's no fun. I've been on a few dates, but the whole prospect is nerve-wracking. There's just so many restrictions, things you can't do, things you can't talk about, subjects you can't bring up. Your hands are tied, so to speak. You dare not touch her without permission or drink too much or let her drink too much. You gotta watch your P's and Q's all the time. You tell an off-color joke, she might say you're sexist or racist and it's over. If you mention Biden is walking dead and Fauci's a scam artist, that BLM is ridiculous. You're an automatic knuckle-dragging Trumper, a Nazi. And heaven forbid you open your mouth about vaxxers and lockdowns being a scam. If the date doesn't turn out right and it pisses her off in some way, you'll get smeared on social media. So for me, the dating game in my town is just too much for me to handle. So initially my problem was that I'm a five who constantly gets rejected by eights, though I am occasionally sought after by twos, threes, and fours. making the whole business not worth the hassle. And not too long ago, I got my plan B going, landed in Guatemala, and looked in the mirror, and I was still a five, with a penchant for pursuing eights. But being sought after this time by 3s, 4s, 5s, 6s, 7s, 8s, and 9s. And because my Spanish was poor to non-existent, it took me about 6 months to realize it. And this single observation proved more valuable to my auto-esteem and self-worth than 3 years of therapy. So, a word to the wise. All you Broken and Lonely Hearts Club members up in Canada and the United States who've discovered those mating and dating sites are minefields. If you're single with a plan B in Latin America, you must remember once you arrive, it's a different playing field altogether. You must adjust your mating and dating strategy accordingly. And about baggage, once you hit 50 and re-enter the dating game as I have, you'll find out quickly no one out there is without baggage. Have you checked your own lately? Signed, Mr. James, the guy who finally won the lottery. Then we've got this email from Richie. He says, Johnny, people wonder why I'm able to get my plan B going at the ripe old age of 45. We have no debts. Our house is paid for. We just sold it. And have a very decent bank account. It's just that I don't have the number one baggage most people have when they're thinking about getting the hell out of Dodge. Namely, we don't have kids and never plan to have any. We have a group of like-minded friends who desperately want to get the hell out of Dodge, too. We're talking about it all the time. But they can't right now. Probably not for a long, long time because they have dependent, lazy-ass kids, some in their 20s, too, that they're stuck with, who they coddle and continuously support. They've become the final safety net for their own unmotivated kids. The furnace goes out, they call Dad. The car breaks down, they call Daddy. Can't scratch up the tuition payment for the grandkids' school, they call Daddy. At 45, I watched all my friends go through the ups and downs of having kids. And from what I can see, having kids is a burden that never ends. People are way too proud and indulgent of their kids, too. They turn 16, you buy them a car. Why? Because they earn it? Because they deserve it? Then comes freshman year in college. Daddy funds a spring break trip to Florida or Costa Rica. Because they earned it? Because they deserve it? Thing is, Johnny, I have many friends and acquaintances with adult kids, and not a single one of them is curing cancer or changing the world in any significant positive way. Yet they all have nice cars and apartments, take vacations, and go to expensive private schools. Of course, many of them are way over their heads in school loans, but guess who co-signs? Mommy and Daddy. You can look up how many mommies and daddies are on the hook for their unmotivated kids' delinquent student loans. Hundreds of thousands of parents are making those payments now. Call me cynical, call me cruel, Johnny, but having kids seems like a very bad investment. Johnny, I never wanted kids and feel no guilt over it. Even more so now that I was able to get out of Dodge and escape to Latin America at the ripe old age of 45. It hasn't escaped my notice that most of the gringos and expats who are now living here in Latin America got here when they were 60 or so. Some of them probably half or more, not in the greatest physical shape either. And almost to a person, they all say moving to Latin America was the best thing they ever did. They wish they would have done it sooner. But they couldn't. Why? Number one reason? Kid baggage. And don't think I haven't heard the common defense of why you really should have kids. You've heard it a million times too. It's about the twilight years. Your children are supposed to take care of their aging parents in the twilight years. It's the unspoken duty of every kid, right? Well, that may have been true of the baby boomers and earlier generations. But in our present world of super entitled kids, it appears to me that most of them are hanging around their parents just long enough to make sure they're still in the will. Because everyone knows it's the baby boomers' turn to croak. And they've amassed an unprecedented hoard of capital and wealth. And where do you think that's going to go when they die? Right into the laps of their entitled kids and grandkids. For those who are naive enough to think that your twilight years in the nursing home or senior center will be filled with loving visits from the kids and grandkids, then I guess you haven't visited a nursing home lately. They're just chock-filled with some of the loneliest people on the planet. Though I do understand my opinion will get a lot of pushback, especially from those hypocrites who secretly agree with my points. I understand after investing 20 years of your life, your wealth, and your time in the kid program, it's hard to look back and admit to yourself it just wasn't worth it. Life could have been so much easier. Fewer worries, so much less stress and drama. Go ahead, admit it. But you won't. I've watched how my friends' kids have controlled their lives. From the moment they get up to the time they go to bed, kids influence what you eat, where you go, where you live, how much money you can spend, what kind of car you can drive, how many hours you can play or not play video games, what you do in your time off, the influence whether you can or can't have sex, what you wear, where you spend your leisure time, where you go on vacation, what you watch on TV, even what friends you can and can't have. In fact, because me and my wife don't have kids, sometimes we're not invited to certain activities of our friends who do have kids. Wonder why I never want to have kids? I was one of six kids myself, and I remember not enjoying it much at all. Everything was a major production. The noise around the house was always at a constant rumble. My mom was worn to a frazzle, and my dad and I rarely got along, probably because he was so stressed out trying to support his huge growing family, he didn't have time or the energy for anything else. He worked two, sometimes three jobs and was always dead tired when he got home, flopped on the couch, had a beer, watched TV, and fell asleep, watching Johnny Carson. He was out by midnight. I didn't get married till I was 30, and my wife said about kids she could take them or leave them. The unspoken truth is, and people don't like to hear her talk about this, but my wife and I can't list how many adults we know with horrible adult children who've been a pain in their asses their entire lives. Kids, you can have them. All right, me, Johnny here. Richie, I know many parents whose kids truly limited what they could accomplish because they always had to deal with their kids and bail them out of their problems. Even now, when these kids are in their 20s, the parents feel a commitment to help them out. Isn't it supposed to be the other way around? In fact, a banker friend of mine told me there's an unprecedented number of baby boomers refinancing their houses that have been paid for years just to get their entitled 20 or 30-something kids out of some kind of financial hole. Anyway, there's a little more from Richie. He says, sometimes when people ask us, do we regret not having kids, we fantasize a bit what it might have been like to have perfect children and perfect grandchildren. But then I look at my nieces and nephews and realize that it was a 50-50 chance. Roll of the dice, at best. Signed, Richie B. and wife, newly arrived expats in El Salvador. Well, Richie, thanks for that, and I'm sure what you said resonates with lots of people, but they don't want to talk about that stuff, not in mixed company. It can be sort of touchy. As for me, I'm also one of those guys who's never had kids. And man, if I had a nickel for every time someone said, when are you going to have kids, I'd have another Bitcoin. By the way, just for the record, I have six nieces and nephews. All of them are super entitled, yet only three of them show the least bit of appreciation for what they have. And the other three are good enough actors to make sure they're in daddy's will.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos. Y no Spanish.